Mail It In Friday on Overdrive continues, brought to you by Coors Light, Mountain Cold Refreshment, made to chill. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. Al's Brother continues to trend online. Al's Brother is trending on Twitter, on Instagram, everything across the board, because he and the O-Dog ran their 200-meter race earlier today. They both did just a spectacular job. There's no other way of phrasing it, Noodles. Like, there's no other way of putting it. Both of them came gunning out of the gates, and they continued to run the whole time, which is something significant.
Yep.
Never stopped, never walked. O-Dog at 42 seconds, Al's Brother at 47 seconds, crushing the under, Vegas taking a bath. Yep. And we love it. We love it.
I thought it was great. Fantastic theater. If you break down the running stride and stuff, like, O was very consistent. Al's Brother, like another 10 meters, it might not have gone so well.
Mm-hmm.
Like if that was 210 meters, like he was walking by the end. But he was guns blazing out of the block.
Out of the chute, man. And, yeah. And that's it. And you're right. O was thinking like slow and steady wins the race.
Yep.
And that's kind of what he did. And Al's Brother was more like the hare, and he got out of the gate flying, and he was taunting the turtle.
Yeah.
But eventually, you know, the O-Dog blew past him. But Al's Brother was in the winner's circle the original time we did this, right? The 40-yard dash, Al's Brother won that race. He won the vertical jump, and yep. Now O is back in the winner's circle. So we're going to have two more events, hopefully to kind of determine how this is going to play out. And I'll admit, I'm biased here. I hope the O-Dog wins the next event. That
right.
would make it 2-2 in terms of total score. 40-yard dash, vertical, 200-meter, and then whatever the fourth event is. If O wins that, we're talking about a tiebreaker here that saying it's going to go viral I don't think is enough.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it sells it enough.
It'll be trending in for sure in
Worldwide.
Canada. It's must-watch TV, but I thought to myself when we were spitballing, you know, ideas. I know O didn't like the wrestling idea. That's fine. But I wonder if we laid out there one event and then let the fans vote on event.
Yes.
To see if they would bite off that. Because
okay.
that's where you could get interaction. Like, I wonder if it was like, you know, like, what's that called where you're diving, like pool diving.
Yeah, pool diving, yes. Diving would be good, like
the
high board. Or,
yeah, the high board, you know.
Yeah,
like,
we could do that. Like the high one, you're just off like a like concrete. But
like
if
a
we
plank,
do,
yeah, platform, yeah.
Yeah, the plank. But if we do the one that is like a diving board where you can
right.
really get some weight
yeah,
behind
can,
it.
Exactly.
And some suspension.
Like, you can, like I like to think of as the movie Easy Money where it's with Rodney Dangerfield. He does the triple Lindy and he goes from
it.
Diving. Like I feel like Al's Brother and O would be able to put a show on off the diving board.
Okay. I hadn't thought of the pool, but I think that's something that has to come into play here. So we'll let the people talk, let them
yeah.
speak and let them vote. And eventually we'll come to some sort of conclusion.
Agreed.
We had discussed this story a while ago. It was a few weeks ago. It came out. Denver Broncos offensive tackle, Juwan James. Remember he tore his Achilles?
Yep.
Blew out his Achilles away from the complex, and there was immediately a report that the Broncos may not hold on to him or may not pay out his contract because there was obviously some sort of clause where if you get injured away from the facility, it either makes it, you know, non-guaranteed or it wasn't guaranteed anyway, and there's
yep.
some sort of fine print that would allow the team to dance around it. And I think we all reacted the same way. If he's a guy you believe in, and as long as he wasn't doing anything really stupid, that just
right.
seems kind of gutless and greasy. Like, I get it, cap ramifications and all that, but pay the guy the money, let him
yeah.
rehab at the facility, let him come back and try to achieve something in the future for your team. Well, that will not be the case because Field Yates reporting and Schefter tweeting out that the Broncos have cut Juwan James, who recently
wow.
tore his Achilles. So I want to know more details. What was he doing that led to him blowing out the Achilles? Because if it was him at a gym and he did it,
yeah,
what is that all about? Why is that
crap.
Even...
That's gutless.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Like, why is that even allowed? Where is the NFLPA? How do you allow a contract clause like that?
Well, there's got to be something fishy then if the PA's not kicking up dust. Like, I know of a player, I won't say the team or the player, who broke his ankle outside a bar. In a dust-up.
Right.
And, you know, the team, I think the team suspended him because they found out the actual true story. But, you know, ultimately, like, that's the type of stuff you hear. You know, you hear these stories, a guy, you know, was messing around. Like, training's a different story. Like, if you're training and you're working hard and you're working at your craft and you roll your ankle or you do something really bad, like, you should get paid, because you wouldn't be doing that because
it comes
you're
with the job. You have to work
the job.
Out.
Exactly.
Yeah, you have to prepare. Exactly. Right. And that's why my spidey senses are going off. I'm like, was he in Vegas or something at a pool party? You know, but even that, like, you're not allowed to live and do something? Or was it something where you were on a motorcycle that clearly says in the contract you're not allowed to be on it? I don't know what it is, but
yeah,
that's the life of an NFL contract, man. Like, if there's no guarantees and you can't play for them, it's all business. See you later.
That's why, you know, the NFL, I know there's guaranteed money, but it gets frowned on. You know, you always hear the kicker misses the big field goal on Sunday. Monday, he doesn't have a job.
Yep.
Like, that's where in the NHL, like, in a physical sport, and football should be no different, because it's as physical or more physical than anybody else. Like, those guys put their, you know, their bodies on the lines, everything. And you could get turfed in a day. Like, guaranteed contracts, that's one thing that the NHL has better than anybody else.
Absolutely.
You sign a deal, you get paid, regardless of how it unfolds.
Everything I've heard from anyone affiliated with the PA at any point is that is the hill you die on. That's
right.
The one, if it's going to be a 2-year lockout, 3-4-year lockout, and that was what was being fought for forever. I'm sure when you were still in the league, it was, hey, we might have to accept the cap, but guaranteed contract, that is not up for debate. Because the owners would love it. Owners would love to be able to, like, I'm sure every other owner in every other sport is so envious of the NFL, because they make more money, they generate more money, and you have the ability to just cut guys.
Yeah.
Like, not working for us, cut, don't have to pay anymore. It's like, wow, man, it's ruthless, and it's a big sport. It's a tough sport, but they've calculated that. It's worked out the way it's worked out, and I'm sure the players have pushed. I know they have, for more guarantees. They don't get them, and they're not willing to hold out because they've never had them in the NFL. So that is kind of a tough story to digest and to accept. We should touch on what Matt LaFleur had to say about Aaron Rodgers. We'll get to that a little bit later in the hour. Mike Johnson will join us as well. But the Raptors, you know, they lost last night. It was ugly. That wraps it up for them. I mean, they're going to finish 7th last in the NBA, and they got 2 more games to go. They're in Dallas tonight, Indiana over the weekend. Here's our Raptors reporter, Josh Lewenberg. I guess that's a celebratory loss last night, Josh. Like, I guess the plan worked here in terms of tanking and solidifying a spot in the standings that they were seeking out.
Mission accomplished,
yep.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's mail it in Friday for the Raptors today. It was mail it in Friday for them yesterday. It's been mail it in Friday for the Raptors for most of the last few weeks. But yeah, they know where they're going to be sitting now. They know how many lottery balls they're going to have. I'm sure they would have probably liked to have more once they realized that they weren't going to make the playoffs and they weren't pushing hard for the play-in. It was sort of a bizarre situation in the NBA this year where, like, I mean, the teams that are below them, the 6 teams that are below them in the standings were tanking harder and tanking longer than the Raptors were. They would have had to lose at least 6 or 7 more games, maybe even more than that, to fall any further in the standings. So this is where they are. It's not an entirely bad place to be from a lottery ball standpoint. Like, they're going to have a 7.5% chance of getting the top pick, a 31.9% chance of moving into the top 4, which is not nothing. And to put it into perspective, I mean, it was obviously really important for the Raptors to nail down that 7th spot, 7th from the bottom. If they would have finished where the Bulls, it looks like, are going to finish, 8th from the bottom, they would have had a 25-26% chance of a top 4 pick. So that extra 6% of moving into the top 4, especially in a top-heavy draft, is not nothing. And I know there's a lot of frustration from people watching Kyle Lowry rest all these games, but if that's your goal, and I can tell you that that's pretty much what the Raptors' goal has been of late, is to get those lottery balls. Kyle Lowry wins you games. I mean, I'm not sure that there's a player. I know that there's not a player in Raptors history that has been more valuable in terms of winning games than Kyle Lowry. He won them that Lakers game, which might now end up being the last game that Kyle Lowry played this season and maybe plays as a member of the Toronto Raptors. He won them that game. So for him sitting out, that's helped them end up in this spot where they find themselves today and where they'll find themselves in a couple of days. And I mean, I think you can look at it two ways, right? In some ways, yeah, I mean, maybe they should have tanked harder, or maybe they should have pushed harder for that play-in spot and really chose and committed to a pass. But on the other hand, they're a team that's going to find themselves almost certainly with a top 10 pick in a couple months from now that they can add to a promising young core of Siakam, Anunoby, VanVleet. They've got cap flexibility, so future's not looking terrible. I think they're still in a pretty good spot going forward.
Josh, the last couple of days we've been talking about it, and I just want you to weigh in too. Just, I mean, Kyle Lowry, I mean, should he have been traded at the deadline if this is where you're going to end up? Like, do you think it was a miscalculation or maybe an ask price too high, or they have something up their sleeve? It just, we're trying to figure out, because if you really aren't going to use him to win games, and you just said if LA's his last game, did you see a missed opportunity to maybe grab an asset for him or two at the deadline to continue to help to recycle or cycle, you know, through the younger players now?
It's a really good question, Noodles. It's the question right now in terms of Kyle Lowry and his future with the Raptors. Did they miscalculate? Did they mismanage that situation? I think it's impossible to really answer without knowing two things. First, we have to know what was out there in terms of the offers. I have a pretty good idea of what it was, and it wasn't great. And I think that's what we've heard. That's what a lot of people have heard around the NBA, is that the market for Lowry at the deadline it was pretty underwhelming. The Raptors weren't happy with the offers, and that not only did no one meet their asking price, regardless of how high it was, nobody even came close to that. But the second thing, and I think this is actually the biggest factor, is do the Raptors know that Kyle Lowry isn't coming back next year? If the answer is yes, then I would argue, I would agree with you and argue that, yeah, at that point, you take whatever you could get, even if it's a low-level prospect or a pick that's not really that great. You take it if you know that it's that or nothing that Kyle Lowry wants. But I'm not sure that they know he's not coming back. I think, one, they like the idea that they still have him. They've got his bird rights. They've got the option of bringing him back. And I think there's still some value in that potentially, because this is not a team that's rebuilding. This is not a team that's pulling the plug and tearing things down after this year. This is a team that still wants to win. And as we talked about, Kyle Lowry helps you win. There's still a possibility, I think, that he's a Raptor next year. And then there's also the possibility of a sign and trade. Depending on where Kyle wants to go, if he does end up leaving, I mean, if it's, let's say, Miami, they've got some money. Maybe they can sign him outright. But what if he wants to go to Philadelphia? What if he wants to go to one of the L.A. teams, the Clippers or the Lakers? They don't have enough money to sign him outright, which means that they would have to make a sign and trade with the Raptors. And at that point, if the offers were so bad in March, maybe they end up getting as much or more for him in a sign and trade in a couple months from now than they would have at the trade deadline. So I think those things are considerations in terms of, like, the tank scenario. If they had moved Kyle Lowry, even from a tank standpoint, I'm not sure that they still lose enough games to end up further than they are right now. I just don't think, I mean, you could have moved Kyle Lowry or even shut him down at that point in the year. But all the other guys that were helping you win that you would theoretically need to sit and shut down in order to go full tank, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, those are the guys that help you win, but they're also guys that are all under 28 years old. They're all still in the development stages of their career, and you need those guys to play. I mean, they gave them rest nights here and there, and they basically shut those guys down now, but you needed those guys on the court in order to help them grow. So the Raptors, I think when it comes down to it, they're just not a team that was built to go full tank this year, and that's why they ended up where they ended up.
With Josh Lewenberg, well, in terms of trying to project, you know, how quickly they can turn this around, and more succinctly, what they're going to be capable of doing next year, how much of that projection and positive projection, if you feel like they can get back on the horse here, back in the saddle and make the playoffs, depends on Lowry returning? In other words, if he's back, can they be a 50-win team and back a top, you know, 4 or 5 team in the East? As opposed to if he walks, what is the margin for error, in your opinion, in terms of what they can put together that can lead them to being competitive with or without Kyle Lowry next year?
Well, I guess the question there would be, if he walks, if he's not a Raptor next year, what do they replace him with? Because it's an either or scenario when it comes to all of this cap space. I feel like we've been talking about cap space now for the last few years. For the most part, we have been, right? Because pretty much since Kawhi Leonard left in the summer of 2019, the Raptors' priority, pretty high on their list of priorities, if not at the top of it, has been to maintain their coveted cap flexibility for the summer of 2021. And the top target, no secret, was Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's off the board, but now pretty much everybody else is off the board too. I mean, this summer, considering how much excitement there was for this free agent crop, it's almost disappeared entirely now. I mean, even somebody like Victor Oladipo at one point was like a really exciting possibility, not specifically for the Raptors, but in general as one of the top names on that list. And now he's having surgery again. Who knows if he's even going to play next season? So he's off the board. Paul George signed an extension. He's off the board. Kawhi Leonard, I mean, obviously for the Raptors, that's probably not a realistic scenario. Probably never was. But for anybody, I don't know how reasonable that is. He's going back to the Clippers. LeBron's going back to the Lakers. So I'm not sure what the alternative is. But for the Raptors, it's an either-or scenario. Either you're bringing Kyle Lowry back and I mean, I think they probably bring back Gary Trent regardless, and they're able to do that because he's a restricted free agent and they have his bird rights. But in addition to Trent, you're either bringing Lowry back or then you've got $20 million or so to work with if he leaves to either sign another free agent or make a trade. So it really depends what you're replacing him with, what their plan is if he leaves. I still think, the foundation is there. The foundation is there. Pretty similar to the foundation that was there last year, with the exception of Ibaka and, I guess, Lowry, to be a winning team in the Eastern Conference. I still think they're good enough, and then you're adding a top 10 pick to that. But there are so many variables beyond that and so many things that went wrong this year. Are they still in Tampa next year? That's a big part of it, right? Because right. I think it's hard to quantify how much that hurt them this year, how many wins that cost them being in Tampa. But I think most people would agree it was a huge disadvantage. It played a part to some degree in where they ended up this year. If they're back in Tampa next year, then, yeah, that's another obstacle they're working with. I think – There are a lot of things that went wrong this year, and if those things go wrong again next year, it doesn't really matter if Kyle Lowry's around or not. I think it's going to be very tough to overcome those things.
Well, it also comes down to doing the math game and looking at the rest of the Eastern Conference. So if you're going to make your way back up the standings, who are you knocking off? Because I think Philly will still be a formidable team next year. Brooklyn will be. Milwaukee will be. I think Miami will probably be even better. Like, they've really been hit with COVID and injuries this year. The Knicks, Atlanta, Charlotte, it's tough to get a read on those teams because they're doing something they haven't done in so long. But that has to be a part of the calculation as well. If you're going to move back up and try to be a 50-win team, then that means you got to beat a lot of teams in the East, and they have not managed to do that this year. So that has to be a part of the calculation as well. It's got to be more than just Kyle. I mean, even with everything you just said, Josh, which a lot of it I agree with, if you bring Kyle back, they've got to address the front court. They got to find depth, right? Like, it's pretty simple. It hasn't been there all year.
This is a huge offseason for them. I feel like we say that every offseason, but this has got to be one of the most important offseasons in franchise history. I'm not going to – might be hyperbolic to say that it's their most important, but let's put it this way. The most important player in franchise history is a free agent. The most important person off the court in franchise history is a free agent, Masai Ujiri. That's another huge looming question hanging over this team going into the offseason. And as I said, we don't know where they're going to play games next year. So as I think when you look at, let's put it this way, they didn't make the playoffs for the first time in 8 years. They're going into the lottery. For a lot of other teams that would be in that situation, that would be a disaster. I don't think this is a disaster for the Raptors, because I do think if you're going to be in that situation with three young, promising players, not superstars, but players with star qualities, star potential tied to, for the most part, at least for two of them, team-friendly deals with cap space, with a top 10 pick. It's a good situation, but I just think there's still so much uncertainty with everything going on around those guys. That's a pretty good foundation, but it's four guys, I guess, if you include the top 10 pick, five guys if you include Gary Trent. And I think they've solved some of those other things along the way. Like, they've solved the center situation to some degree. Ken Burch isn't the answer. I don't think he's your starting center of the future, but he's probably your backup center, and that's pretty good considering where they found themselves with Aaron Baines and company a few months ago. So they've got some pieces, but there needs to be a plan here. We don't know what it is, but that doesn't mean there isn't a plan for Ujiri and for Webster and for those guys. I'm really curious to see what it is because there are two or three pieces that are missing from this team in order to say I'm really excited about where they're going to be and who they're going to be next year.
Yep, absolutely. There's going to be a lot of moving parts. It's going to be a fun offseason, potentially a very emotional offseason, like you just said. You'll be all over it as always. Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you.
All right, guys. Take care.
Josh Leuenberger, Raptors reporter. Yeah, Josh is going to have 15 different drafts in his archives when it comes to the Masai story, the Lowry story, the draft lottery, the draft, free agency. I mean, there's five right there in terms of what's coming.
You're bang on, and all I can think about, too, is, like, I don't want to say poor Nick Nurse, but Nick Nurse, like, this guy was, like, all just
coach
coaching
the
hell out of
it.
He was just trying to coach the hell out of this team. And I guarantee you from above, they're like, yeah, he's not available. He's not available. We're doing this. We're doing that. So almost basically saying, like, he was given the Paul Maurice speech every night. You know what I mean?
Like, right. Gentleman's agreement here.
Gentleman's agreement here. Let's just go out and play. And you watch him sometimes on the sidelines and his head's going to pop off. Like, he's so, you could tell he's fired up and frustrated because coaches aren't wired for rebuilds. So they don't care about the future. What they care about is their record, how they're coaching that night. And yeah, I guarantee you it ate him a lot this year to see what they were going through. And I know there were so many excuses in play and, you know, COVID and you're not at home and all of that and a rebuild. But coach doesn't care. He coaches who they hand him. And I guarantee you there's nights probably on the whiteboard because I can only speak to my experience. I've been in coach's office at the National Hockey League level, and they'll point at the whiteboard and go, I got six guys in the lineup tonight who shouldn't be in this league. I guarantee you
absolutely
Nick Nurse has probably told his friends that, like,
last
in a
night.
Candid moment.
Yeah, last night, exactly. You would have looked at it and said, we were in an NBA Finals 2 years ago, and we were on pace for 60-plus wins a year ago.
Right.
And now look at my lineup tonight.
Right.
I
got to look at my card. I got to look at my card to recognize somebody from 905. You
absolutely.
Know what I mean?
He knows what he's dealing with. And he's in lockstep with, you know, Webster and Masai. He's a part of the program. He's a part of the hierarchy as well. So he's got to chew on it. And he's got to speak accordingly. He's got to do what he's got to do. But the Raptors, now that it's over, they're going to finish seventh last. Josh said it, 31.9% chance of moving into the top four. That's what it comes down to. That's what matters. You know, so you got Masai in his situation, Lowry in his situation, the draft lottery, the draft, free agency, five massive pillars of the offseason. And I agree with him. It's going to be potentially the most emotional, maybe most uplifting, maybe most heartbreaking offseason, and that's saying something for a Toronto Raptor fan base that has seen it all, been through it all. But also pivotal offseason in terms of putting the building blocks back in place.
Right.
And making sure you get back into a position that you've been familiar with for 7 years. You go to the playoffs every year. So, and on top of it all, can you come home? Are you going to be at home playing next October in Toronto? We still don't have that answer right now. They're canceling everything in Toronto.
I know.
The day after Doug Ford makes the announcement, a couple more weeks, the city comes out like, nah, the X is done. Taste of the Danforth done. Caravana done. It's like, come on, guys.
I saw that. And, you know, all I can say is let's get our doses, do what we can, do our part. And, you know, you're starting to see them say, well, you can get outside if you've been, you know, vaccinated. Or like I've been reading some stuff this afternoon about, you know, hopefully whether one dose summer or however you want to coin it. But that means you might be able to see your friends and all of that. Like the frustration, let's not do it on a Friday.
We just had a great show.
Let's leave it be and let's keep it rolling here. Talk to MJ about some hockey coming up.
Yes. We'll come back. Mike Johnson will join us on the Leafs Jets tonight. Desperation throughout the Cup playoffs in terms of who has it the most, who needs it the most.
Yeah.
A lot's coming up with MJ. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, the Leafs and Jets tonight. You can watch it on TSN, hear it right here on TSN. And Paul Maurice has called a shot. This is going to be a charity event tonight. This is an alumni game, right? Gentlemen's agreement, no late hits, nothing crazy. But Ray told us the story of a similar scenario back in his day where, like, the two captains had met in a room before the game and said, all right, you know, we're done. Let's just play it. Let's be smart here. And one dum-dum went running around and caught some guy with his head down, and all hell broke loose.
I'm telling you.
It could happen tonight, right? Like, one stupid play by one player. I don't know who it is, and you never know what could happen tonight.
I agree. And it could be one on either side where it's like, you know, trying to send a message or do something, you know. I just don't know if there's any young players that want to make an impression. Like, I don't see Adam Brooks trying to,
you know,
I
got
to make
point.
It into the lineup, going to hit somebody from behind type of thing. That's just not in his DNA. He's going to try and score to show that he belongs in the lineup type of thing. I'm not lying. I've played with players in that last game, but it's a young guy gets called up. It's a, you know, somebody wants to make an impression, and they're going to play as hard as they've ever played, and everyone else is at 75%. And everyone else on the bench is like, dial it back here.
Just relax, boys.
Exactly.
Come on. This is where teammates are yelling at teammates.
Yeah,
saying, hey,
their own teammates.
Smarten
yeah.
up. Like, I don't want to get hit. I just want to go home.
Exactly.
Here's our TSN hockey analyst, Mike Johnson. Have you been in any of these games, MJ, where there's a gentleman's agreement, like no hitting, no icing, no covering the puck? Let's just get the hell out of here.
Hey, I tried to play my whole career under that agreement. What are you talking about?
Right.
Sadly, I've been in plenty of games like this. I played on some trash teams that were, you know, last 10 games, you had nothing to play for. The last three or four, you're playing with other teams that have nothing to play for. And what you guys were just talking about is, I think about it now, and it almost feels wrong to tell some kid who got called up, is put in the lineup, you know, he has a chance to make an impression, and not through, you know, nonverbal communication, flat out told, hey, you got to slow down. Don't be hitting everybody. We got to get through this game. Meanwhile, this might be his one and only game in the NHL, and you have veterans telling him, just relax, pal.
Right.
Don't try so hard, which seems so wrong now, but at the time you're like, no, but I don't really want to get run through the boards and have everyone get all dialed up in this game. So when you have the opponent's coach, like Paul Maurice today said, he said gentleman's agreement. You know, both teams are getting ready. They're going to try to play, but keep it clean and maybe not quite as much hitting. So we know the ground rules going in. But for an offensive player, it's not so bad. Like, if you're Austin Matthews, like, okay, I don't mind a no-hitter. Turn this into an all-skill thing and see what happens. That's, I think, maybe the worst thing in the world for the Jets, for that matter. They got some pretty skilled guys, too. So it could be a fun game to watch because no hitting, no intensity usually means more offense.
Yeah, you're right. I'm looking at it through the other lens. No goalie wants to play this game.
Nope.
Because if there's no hitting or, you know, no bearing down on a guy because it might be perceived as finishing a check, all that does is open lanes to the net. So you're right. So Matthews, and I know Marner's not playing, but Tavares, Nylander, Kyle Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler, like guys like that are going, hey, this is great. I'll take five shots on goal tonight, see how this unfolds. Like, it is tough. I understand it. But I've also been the guy who's starting in net on the last game of the season because they're saving the goalie, they're saving the starting goaltender. So I'm just trying to make it through the game. These are just unique, but I hope for everyone's sake, it's a good game, but nothing to see here.
Clean, right? Just get out of Dodge.
Exactly.
Yeah. Get out of Dodge. That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's it. Although you can tell early, like, if the goalies – and the referees are in on this too, and you know it. Like, they're waving off icing. You're like, that's pretty much an icing, but well, whatever. Like, they got a plane to catch at 10 p.m. So everyone's in on the understanding that this game really doesn't matter for anything of consequence. So I think it will probably get played out like that.
With Mike Johnson, are you at all surprised that it was Marner that gets the night off tonight for Adam Brooks as opposed to a? And maybe it could have been cap complications with Marner. I don't know. But they could only use one guy. It was Brooks. and they decided to give Marner the night off as opposed to Matthews or Tavares. What do you make of that?
I am surprised without knowing everyone's degree of health. Like maybe Mitch is a little sore or something, right. But if everyone's feeling the same, I mean, of course you sit out Austin Matthews, don't you? I mean, like it's you. He has nothing to prove, nothing to catch. It's not like he has any Iron Man streak to go with. He's already missed games. So you don't need him jamming up a wrist on a face-off or a knock into the boards. I would have asked Austin if he would want to sit this one out. And then even if Mitch has to play, well, guess what? Mitch, you're playing 4 minutes tonight. You're just going to sit there and be a cheerleader. We'll let Mikheyev play 22 and Wayne Simmons can play 18. Like you can have a winger out there and barely not even play him. But I was a little surprised just with the injury history of Austin Matthews and the fact that, generally speaking, if you're going to play center, there is more wear and tear, like face-offs, getting banged around down low. You're in the traffic because you're around the puck more often, so I'd want to protect Austin Matthews as much as I could.
With Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. Go ahead, Noodles.
No, I wanted to get your guys' thought on this. Mitch Marner, I don't think anybody can pass him in points, so I think he's fourth, whereas Austin is tied with Rantanen. Now, I know these are individual things, but it might be a situation where it's like, okay, everyone behind Mitch, like he's solidified top five scoring, where Austin can now get to number five, if that makes sense, or catch
Mitch.
Right,
with a point tonight, he's on his
right,
own.
Point.
Yep.
Exactly. That's the only thing I could think of on a non-injury, non-cap related. I'm sure that's probably far down the list, but that was the first thing I thought of because Rantanen, I think, had a couple points last night. McKinnon's been shut down, so there's nobody else. You know, McDavid and Draisaitl are miles ahead, so it's like, okay, this is – if there's one guy who's going to sit, you know, that's what I thought. Give
His
Austin a chance
over,
to stand alone. Right, yeah.
Yeah, but I got to say, if you're Austin Matthews, if I was Austin Matthews, and don't I wish I was some days, but if I was Austin Matthews, like finishing – being able to say I'm top five by myself, I'm hoping that doesn't really resonate with him. You know, he's right. So much bigger than that. He's already going to win the Rocket. He's already amongst the top few players in the world. You know, finishing sixth or fifth or fourth, I would think, I don't know how much that lands on his radar.
Yeah, I agree. I was maybe overthinking it. I just
for a reason, yeah.
But that's what it comes down to, right? Because I would have figured it would be Matthews first, even Tavares, who's older. You know, like Tavares is
out of respect.
Exactly. You're the captain. You've been around. You're older. You need to make sure you've got your Jets, you know, cooking come playoff time. Why don't we give you the night off? Or a defenseman, even, you know, if it works out that way. And I know Brooks is going in, so that's probably not going to be able to work out. But listen, nothing against Mitch Marner. He's played a ton of minutes. He's played the most minutes. It could come down to that as well. It could be a little bit nicked up. Minutes, he probably feels good. And they've made the call here. And ultimately, you just hope everyone gets out of here with their health on both sides of things. We were talking about desperation in the room based on Chris Letang's comments from earlier, where he conceded that there is some desperation because they realize in Pittsburgh, Sid's getting older, Gino's getting older, you got to take advantage. I'm sure the same mentality applies in Washington with Ovi, with Chara. I think it should with the Leafs. There's a few different teams that probably could apply here. Is there one in particular for you where you can understand that desperation narrative maybe applies to them more than everyone else?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be the hometown. Like, I think it might be Toronto. While they're not old, their group as they know it is going to be different. And all these guys they brought in to win have not won. So Wayne Simmons, Joe Thornton, Jason Spezza, this core, Freddie Anderson, soon to be Morgan Rielly, maybe Zach Hyman. Think about all those guys and how they're wrapped up into the fabric of your team and all the success that they've known and all the disappointments they've had. Like, I think that it's not like they're not going to be good. So in that sense, it's a bit different. But I believe these guys, when you've been around each other for 3, 4, 5 years together, good times, bad times, that you get close. You have no choice but to get close. And I think for that reason, they should feel a sense of urgency that a chance this good, and you factor in the North Division and the fact the Canadian team is going to get to the semifinals. There is no Tampa. There is no Boston, maybe even Florida. Like, they have as good a chance this year as this group will probably ever have.
to go deep ever. They may go deeper some other year, but this is the year they have the best chance. And so I don't know if it has to be articulated. Maybe one of the veterans has to stand up sometime in the next 4 or 5 days and say, listen, guys, one day at a time, but we have to appreciate this moment. I remember Hayes back in 99, my second year in the league. I was with Toronto. We made the semifinals. We lost to Buffalo, who lost to Dallas. And I remember thinking at the end of that year, that's okay. We'll be here next year. Like 100%, I thought, I'll be on the Leafs, and we'll be back deep in the playoffs. And neither one of those things were true. I was down in Tampa playing garbage time on the worst team in the league. And the Leafs, you know, they got to the 0-2, I guess, when O was there. They got to the 0-2, they got to the semifinals one more time. But they never got further. And I never got that far again in my life. So I think it has to, like, that story has to be pressed upon the young guys. And I think they know it by now that just because they're great and the team's been good, they can't assume every year they're going to get a chance to go deep. They've never even gotten out of the first round. Like, all this stuff makes Toronto, to me, you know, a hot button, urgent, seize the moment kind of team.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's true. I had it number one. I honestly think it's their – I think they have the best opportunity to go on a run here, more so than any other team I can remember in 30 years, including the early 90s, where it wasn't expected that they were going to go back-to-back to the conference final. That team in 99 that you were on, Johnny, the previous year wasn't that good. Like, you guys had a terrible team, really good year in 99. You guys won the division, and everything came together, and Pat Quinn and – you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think the expectation at any point was, wow, they're really good. They're going to make it to a conference final. Same thing in 02, like really good team. But the Leafs are clearly the favorite, I think, in the first two series they're going to play.
Clearly.
Like clearly the favorite, whatever the combination is. Clearly,
even if it's Edmonton?
Absolutely against Edmonton, they're favorite. They should be
favorite. It wouldn't be by much, though, don't you think?
I would think it'd be by gambling parlance, given that I'm the Joe Gambler with Hayes now. I think it would be by a pretty significant margin. Yeah, I don't think it'd be a coin flip kind of, at least by the odds. I think they'd be pretty heavily favored.
I think so, too. I think they'd be minus 250, minus 300, you know, up against Edmonton.
I know the Leafs beat them three times in a row, but since that time, I think Edmonton may have a better record than the Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last 2 months of the season.
It's close, but listen, Edmonton. I'm not sleeping on Edmonton. I think the Leafs are a better team. I think they've proven that all year. And
I'm just saying. Like, I don't think anything is a slam dunk. I think you have to respect.
Well, relatively speaking, is what I'm saying. Compared to past years, compared.
Boston
and Washington and back. Like, if. You know, that's what I'm suggesting.
Don't get me wrong here.
Guaranteeing they're in the conference final in eight games and they sweep.
No, I'm just don't get me wrong. I would have them favored too. My point is like I think this is the best opportunity for the Leafs. Don't get me wrong. Like I don't think this is a must win, but I think this is the best potential path to get to where you want to be because of how well they played, how well their team is constructed. But my point is, I think you got to take it like one series at a time because you know Montreal's going to throw everything they have and they might think outside the box. And then if Edmonton gets by Winnipeg, I still think Winnipeg's going to throw everything they can at Edmonton.
Sure.
And that's going to be, it'll just be interesting to see because I started to go back and look at like records and I know does a regular season record against a team mean anything? Do you think Tampa's going, geez, Florida beat us a bunch of times this year?
I don't think they should.
I don't think Tampa thinks that, but I bet Florida does. You know what I mean?
That's
I think the team that's lost them, they're like, no big deal. We got this, no problem. And Tampa should feel that. But if you don't think I believe Florida goes in, you know what? We have a sense of belief in our group because of what we did. So, you know, it might not hurt the team that's lost, but I bet it helps the team that wins. And I think in this year where they played so many times, you know, if you were able to go 7-2 against the team, I think there's something to that. There might be a matchup situation that doesn't favor the team that loses. It's not just hot streak, cold streak, bad goaltending, strange call when it's 7-2 or 8-1, whatever it might be. And like, and I see that's where I worry about Winnipeg because Edmonton rolled on them. McDavid had 22 points in nine games. 22. Right. And the way that Winnipeg plays, the fact that they give up lots of rush chances and rely on their goaltender and try to outscore the other skill, well, that's the wrong two guys to do that with, because they're better at that than you are. And right. So that's where I'm just, you know, that's where I think this year specifically was so many games that maybe we could put more into the regular season series than we usually do when they're, you know, when you play four or five times and they're spread out all over the course of a year.
Well, it's go time as of tomorrow night, right. Boston, Washington. And it's going to be a wild couple of months. And we always appreciate you finding time for us, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, boys. Have a good weekend.
You got it. Stop, there he is, Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst.
We forgot to bring up the race with him.
Oh, I just that's assumed right. that. Yeah, you're right. I forgot the grappler said he had seen it.
That's
believe
on me.
Me. This isn't going to stop. Next
no,
time we
I
see
know.
Johnny or talk to Johnny or hear from Johnny, there will be comments because Al's brother's still trending online.
It is. And I wasn't like, I'm not trying to be negative here on matchups. I think this is the Leafs' best opportunity to go far and to get on a run here and do something special. My point is I was looking at matchups last night and I'm like, man, you know, like Edmonton's played some great hockey in the last couple of months. Like, do you factor in head to head? Do you factor in how well they played lately? Do you factor in like, that's what's crazy, because I thought right away, like, now Tampa's been there, done it. It probably was a bad example, because I don't think Tampa cares how well Florida played against them in the regular season.
No.
Tampa knows how to play. But then I thought Colorado, St. Louis. You know, like, St. Louis didn't have a great season, but St. Louis, you got Ryan O'Reilly going, yeah, we're all right. We feel
good. Yeah, we're
good.
I think this year the underdogs are going to be puffing their chest out more than
right.
you think. And that could go against where the Leafs are at right now, where they are going to be the favorite. Once
right.
you get to a second round, third round, I mean, obviously, favorites
yeah.
are, it's difficult to really get a read, because that team's a good team that's in a good place and has put themselves there.
And to your point, like, we'll know after the first round, let's say it's the Leafs and Edmonton, how well did Edmonton play against Winnipeg? How well did the Leafs
ways.
Play against Habs?
Yeah.
Like, you know, who's firing? Who needs to play better? Like, then you kind of readjust your mindset and go, wow, they barely scraped through, or boy, there's some things here, or there's an injury, like that type of stuff. You're right. Like, you reset it. But I was in my mind just trying to, like, go through some of the matchups last night and go, how does that look? What did their season series look like?
I think if you're looking at all of the potential Canadian matchups, the one
right.
that would be closest in terms of a coin flip would be Toronto-Edmonton, and deserves to be, based on what they've done this year.
Right.
So, you know, I think Edmonton's a favorite against Winnipeg, clearly. The Leafs are a big favorite against Montreal. They still got to
yeah.
do it. And I do believe, regardless of what happens, unless massive injuries take place, the Leafs would be favored against Edmonton. But
right.
by no means is it a lock. But
I just wondered, like, how much, like, that, I guess. But you know what?
We'll
why
find
even,
out, hopefully.
Why even talk about it until it presents itself?
It very
right?
well could be here within yeah. the next 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
Should be great.
We'll come back and tee up the weekend. We've got a lot cooking this weekend. Leafs, Raptors, Jays, the Byron Nelson, Stanley Cup playoffs. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Yes, there it is, the music of Al's brother back in studio. Mail it on Friday, brought to you by our friends at Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment, made to chill. This has got Coors Light written all over it tonight. Jays, Leafs, Raptors. You got the Byron Nelson this weekend, but I have a big tinkering day ahead of me tomorrow. Lots of tinkering
really?
In the garage. Yeah, I'm going to clean out the car a little bit tomorrow.
Nice.
And there's two schools of thought here. Do you have beers while you're tinkering? Or do you wait for the Coors Light after you're done tinkering as a celebration?
I think after. I don't know how you feel,
yes.
Al's brother.
Uh-huh.
I think you like, you have them on ice.
Yeah.
And then it's a chair, like it's a carrot.
Yes.
You're like, I want to get this done, and then I'm going to reward myself.
I think
that's the way I feel.
I think you dabble a little bit while you do it. You maybe have a couple. You space it out like once every, you know, 30, 40 minutes or so. And then once you're done, case is gone.
Green light special.
Yes.
Go time. All right.
Yeah.
I like that idea. How you feeling, Al's brother? I mean, you're made to chill this weekend, I would assume. What are you thinking?
Oh, I will not be moving much this weekend. I'll be sitting on the back deck with a Coors Light. That's for sure.
I love it.
Not
going to
be much going on. I feel okay, like lethargic. Like, they really, said it took a bite out of us, and the sun, I think, is really what did it today.
Yeah, well, listen, shout out to UNO. You guys showed up, man. You called the shot.
Yeah.
You said you were
going
to do it. You did it. And it was spectacular. I mean, you guys blew it out of the water. You can find the races online, tsn.ca, on Instagram at TSN1050, at Overdrive1050 on Twitter. It's all over the place. It's gone viral. You're still trending online, Els Brother.
Yeah, I saw the that.
Best. You're trending the online.
Best. That's insane.
And there it is. Two peak performances, two peak athletes. We love it. You guys are awesome. It's been a fun weekend. It's been a fun day, I should say, a fun week. I've got my Coors Light hoodie here, the weighted hoodie, too. I'm going to be rocking that. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So the Raptors are in action tonight. The Leafs are in action tonight. Got Jays this weekend. A lot cooking. It's going to be fun. And by Monday, it is playoff time. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy your weekends. We are back Monday at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.